Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
But first today, to the news that Lebanon experienced a second day of death and chaos yesterday when walkie-talkies across the country exploded. Some of those explosions disrupted the funerals of those killed the previous day in an Israeli intelligence operation which detonated pagers used by the Iranian-backed militant group Hezbollah. So where does all of this leave Hezbollah's military capacity? How might it retaliate at a time when so many of its senior people are injured? And does this make a wider conflict more likely? Well, for the latest, we're joined by Middle East Bureau Chief for the LA Times, Nabia Boulos, and also by Middle East correspondent with The Economist, Greg Karlstrom. And thank you both for joining us this morning. Nabia, you're in Beirut, I understand, and you've seen the aftermath of these attacks. Can I begin by asking you what you've witnessed, what you've seen?
So, I mean, obviously, the sense of panic was quite widespread. I mean, in the beginning, when this first came about, I actually got a message from a friend of mine asking if I had heard anything about this pager situation. And then suddenly when the news started.
Nabi's line appears to have dropped there. We'll work on getting him back. In the meantime, Greg, I'll come to you and good morning to you. Thank you for being with us this morning, Greg Karlstrom from The Economist. So just going to the political side of this, Greg, Benjamin Netanyahu has said, we will return the residents of the north safely to their homes, and that's exactly what we will do. Do you think, though, that in reality, the aftermath of these attacks will mean that the northern border will be a far more dangerous place now for Israelis to be?
I think it's going to remain dangerous. I mean, there was a lot of speculation after the pager explosions on Tuesday afternoon that they were the prelude to a bigger Israeli offensive. There's been some talk in recent weeks amongst Israeli politicians and generals about invading Lebanon to try and occupy a strip of territory along the border to minimize short-range rocket fire and thus make it safe for people to go back to the north. But I think it's increasingly clear almost 48 hours later that the Israeli army does not seem to be planning any sort of major offensive in Lebanon, that these explosions do not seem to be the precursor to an invasion. And if that's the case, if these are sort of, you know, almost a one-off operation, then, yeah, I think in the long run, they're not going to change Israel's security picture on its northern border.
I was watching in the last few minutes a Hezbollah spokesperson telling the BBC that their reprisal is coming. And what do you think Hezbollah will be considering now in terms of a response?
In the short term, I'm not sure they're in the best position to consider a response. If you think about the fact that they have hundreds, if not thousands, of their fighters who have been injured, some of them with quite serious injuries, people who have lost hands, lost eyes, been blinded. There is an issue with manpower. There's an issue around communications, obviously. Their communications network, be it via pagers or via walkie-talkies, has been disrupted over the past 2 days, and they will need to rebuild that, and they will be concerned, I think, understandably, about internal security, about the possibility that there are leaks within the movement and that Israel might have other capabilities that it has not shown yet. And so I think in the long run, they certainly will want to retaliate for this in some rather big way. But I think in the short term, the focus might be on trying to rebuild communications and shore up internal security.
Okay, Nabi is back with us in Beirut. And Nabi, you were telling us what you saw. I know you were down at the hospital, so you saw the aftermath and the chaos. Can you describe some of that for us?
Sure. I actually visited several hospitals, in fact. And I mean, as you can imagine, there were all these families waiting there, finding for news of their loved ones and their relatives. And it should be noted that this wasn't just merely a matter of targeting operatives for Hezbollah. I mean, yes, there are fighters in Hezbollah, clearly, but there are also civilian administrators as well. I mean, the group, it runs educational and charity programs. It's actually a political party as well. So, I mean, its cadres are not merely fighters. I mean, or there are more than just fighters, among the group. And so you had a lot of situations where families were, I'm just trying to figure out what was happening with their loved ones. And as Greg said, they had injuries to the eyes, to the torsos. I saw one person who was actually almost eviscerated, in fact, because the pager had gone off near the torso and had opened up the stomach. And I mean, the bigger issue, of course, is also the fact that you had a shortage of eye and hand surgeons, right? Because of the preponderance of injuries when it came to those areas. There simply aren't enough surgeons to cover that level of need. And this continued until the next day when, of course, you had the second wave, right? With similar wounds and injuries. So as you can imagine, it was a situation which was quite troubling. And of course, along with that comes the rumors of other devices that might also be booby-trapped. So you had messages circulating of people telling others to turn off their Wi-Fi routers, to throw away their iPhones. I mean, it was actually really quite, there's a lot of panic, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And social media rumors that even solar panels were exploding, which turned out not to be true. But I suppose it gives us a sense of the anxiety and the paranoia now that this has sparked.
Yes, indeed. And just to sort of continue on Greg's point, the fact of the matter is that, yes, in the past few months, we have seen Israel be able to target high-ranking members of Hezbollah, such as its chief of staff and regional commanders. But this attack really also hits its normal sort of rank and file. And so, yes, although the commanders are a significant loss, you are also talking about loss of an entire level, I should say, of Hezbollah logistics people and Hezbollah, normal sort of grunts, if you will. And so this is also a problem.
Greg, strategically, what do you think Israel's trying to achieve with the attacks? Because they are relatively small in scale, but hugely eye-catching in terms of their impact.
It's a good question, and no one in Israel is honestly sure. I mean, there has been some reporting over the past 2 days that there was concern amongst Israeli spies that Hezbollah was close to discovering that the pagers were compromised. And so they felt like they were in a situation where if they didn't detonate the pagers, if they didn't use this capability quickly, then Hezbollah would swap out the devices and Israel would lose the ability to detonate them. And so in that case, there isn't a broader strategic goal. In that case, it was simply they had the ability to carry out this eye-catching operation, as you call it, and they carried it out before they lost that capability. That's one possibility. Another is that there's been, I think, some Israelis I've spoken to, some talk about what they call trying to decouple the two fronts. We've said for a year now that the only way to calm down the Israeli-Lebanese border is a ceasefire in Gaza, to end the fighting in Gaza. That ceasefire looks increasingly unlikely. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, has spent months rejecting any effort at a ceasefire. And so what the Israelis might be hoping to do is, as they say, decouple these two fronts, inflict a blow on Hezbollah that they hope might convince the group to make a separate ceasefire with Israel absent a ceasefire in Gaza. I don't think that's actually going to work if that is the strategic goal here, but that might be the logic at work. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about the American response? Because the public utterances are that investigations are ongoing, but we can be sure that the Americans are working hard to shore up the defense, Greg, of Israel in the event that this leads to an escalation.
And they have been doing that for the past few weeks, the past few months. There are American aircraft carrier groups in the region. There are additional American fighter jet squadrons in the region. We saw that in the aftermath of, as Navi said, the assassination of Hezbollah's chief of staff in July, and then the assassination of the Hamas chief in Tehran a day later. The U.S. bulked up its forces in the region to try and send a deterrent message. And there are some people within the Israeli army, the Israeli government, who are pushing for a bigger offensive in Lebanon right now, precisely because there is that American cover in the region. And they think that the U.S. would thus be in a position to be drawn into the war and drawn into trying to defend Israel.
And I'm sure there is a great awareness, Nabi, of that some in Israel are pushing for this bigger offensive now in Lebanon. That must be the great fear.
Well, the fact of the matter is that this has been, or the rhetoric has been similar to that for the last few months, actually, for quite some time, in fact. And there is a belief, I think, among Israeli military circles, and especially among sort of those who lived in the north, that they could just go in and take out Hezbollah and create some sort of a border strip or a buffer zone. And I must say that these ideas have been tried before and they have failed, right? I mean, the fact of the matter is Israel, of course, has the capability of going in and pushing units away from the border, yes. But in terms of actually having a lasting occupation. We have seen, I mean, if past is prelude or perhaps like if past is prologue, we've seen this happen in the past. And also to really, I mean, to Israel's detriment. The fact of the matter is it was forced to withdraw after 17 years of occupation of Lebanon due to Hezbollah's attacks. And so we can expect to see the same thing with a very, very difficult occupation. This will not be an easy situation, I think, for Israel. And it should also be said that Hezbollah now has longer range missiles, such that even if it actually manages to establish this buffer zone, it's not clear to me what effect it would have. I mean, unfortunately, the best option that Israel has is to go back to the status quo ante as it was on October 7 or October 6. But at the same time, as Greg was saying, right, there is this attempt to decouple and there is an attempt to change the equation on that border. But it should be said that equation was able to hold for 17 years, and though fragile, it still was able to hold. So what's going to happen after? It's unclear to me.
So we are expecting to hear from the leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, later today. There is an issue now, isn't there, Nabi, with Hezbollah's credibility, given that they were infiltrated, their communication system was infiltrated to such an extent?
Yes, of course. I mean, as I said, the fact of the matter is it has been unable to counter this penetration for quite some time. We have seen that its landline network, its closed landline network has been penetrated. Its cell phone network has been penetrated, and now the pager and walkie-talkie networks as well. This is a massive breach, and it really is unclear how Hezbollah can counteract it in any way or change the rhetoric. Because, I mean, at this point, I mean, this is actually quite a different Hezbollah in that sense, right? Normally it has appeared as a disciplined, disciplined, quite secure force, right? And certainly more efficient than most institutions in Lebanon. Now this is different. There is a sense that Hezbollah is vulnerable and really quite frighteningly so, I must say. So I'm unsure as to what they can do to change that equation.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us this morning. That's Nabi Boulos, who is with the LA Times as Middle East Bureau Chief, and Greg Carlson from The Economist. Coming up next, little and often, we have a new study from Maynooth University, which proves there is a sweet spot when it comes to homework. We'll hear about that after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.